Hello, Forks and Spoons, Knives and Other Cutlery. I'm your host, Christina.
And I'm Tori.
And this is episode 6 of Call in the Shots, the podcast where we reminisce on the good old Twilight days.
Woo!
So for today's episode, we read the first third of the second installment of the Twilight series, which was the book New Moon. For this icebreaker, which we usually start every episode with, we couldn't actually find a quiz, so instead we're just going to chat. So at this point, we've already finished reading the very, very first book of the Twilight series, which was Twilight. And then after that, we immediately watched the first Twilight movie, which is still one of my favorites ever. So yeah, how was it kind of getting back into reading yet another book and basically starting from scratch, where we're kind of like, I guess, trying to reinvest ourselves into the storyline?
Listen, going from Twilight, that's such a like lovey-dovey love story basically, to something so depressing is a shock. Like, as a child, I'm sure there was more of a like gap in me reading these, maybe, but going from something so like sugar sweet, I guess, to just like a kick in the gut, I'm like, ugh, Jesus Christ, I'm sad.
Yeah,
it's like giving me anxiety.
No. Well, so obviously both Tori and I have already read through all of the books once, at least once before. So we already knew that New Moon was going to be like the events of New Moon. I think for me, it like New Moon, I already knew was like my least favorite because of all the sad things that happened to Bella, or because of all the incidents that are basically like the complete opposite to like what you feel when you read Twilight, the first Twilight book. So I definitely was like already knowing that I was going to feel really sad for the character. And I think this is something that both Tori and I can agree to. I legitimately, I don't know if it's because I wasn't like very interested or maybe I was just extremely exhausted these past few days, but I could not get through the first few chapters without like falling asleep.
Honestly.
Like I remember especially in the first chapter of New Moon, and a lot of things happen. I, for some reason, could not stay awake. Like I would read a few pages and like fall asleep. And then I just really had to like concentrate and focus really hard in order to get to the rest of the chapter.
Probably because you knew you were about to get real sad.
I think I did. Like,
I
guess
I don't want to do this.
It's my coping mechanism. Yeah. My coping mechanism is just a nap after I get so stressed out.
Yeah. And it's kind of rough knowing what's coming. Like, I wish I could reread this for the first time again and not know what's going to happen. Because like I said, I have anxiety because I know what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I have anxiety building up to what is going to happen. Mm-hmm. But we'll get to that.
And I guess I forgot, obviously I forgot a lot of details, like smaller details about how, you know, certain situations come in and like what point A is and what point B is, but I didn't realize that so much happens in the first third of the book. Like I thought it would get stretched out a little more, sort of like it did in the Twilight book.
Mm-hmm.
But there are a lot of notes that we'll eventually like kind of get into as we summarize each of the chapters. But is there anything that you wanted to add, just like, I don't know, general thoughts of how it was reading the first third of New Moon, or even just anything about the New Moon story or book in general?
Listen, I know I've talked some shit on my man Jacob Black before, but I'm really trying to give him a fair chance, and I'm honestly not as annoyed with him as I expected. I think maybe the movies ruined it for me.
I do think that
maybe
too.
I'm annoyed with Taylor Lautner and not poor little Jacob Black, but we'll see. We'll see. I feel in a couple episodes.
No, I definitely know what you mean. Like, I just remember always just being annoyed anytime I would think about Jacob Black's character. But reading this first third of the book, I was like, well, even reading Twilight too, I'm like, this is poor little boy. He doesn't understand what's happening.
I'm like, he's a sweet little boy, sweet little kid.
Little baby who doesn't understand what's going to happen to him.
Little boy who is 6'5".
That's a little for me. No, I'm kidding. But yeah, so if that's it, we can get right into the summaries of the chapters. So the first third, we decided to read chapters 1 through 8. And yeah, we're just going to get into talking about what happened. So the very, very first chapter is titled Party. And it begins with Bella, who's like in this dream sequence. So, in this dream, she thinks that she sees her grandmother, who has already passed away at this point, until suddenly Edward appears and she realizes that the old woman actually isn't her grandma. It's her. And so she freaks out and wakes up. And obviously, she's like frightened for, you know, good reason. I would be pretty freaked out if I saw myself very old in a dream. But when she wakes up, it ends up, or it happens to be September 13th, which is her birthday. So now Bella is 18 years old and she hates that. She hates everything about being a year older because she is now 18. Edward is still 17. And she just like cannot come to terms with the fact that like she's going to continue aging and Edward's not. And she wants to be a vampire so that she can stay with Edward forever. And Edward's like, nah, we're not going to do that. So she basically makes everyone like not acknowledge that it's her birthday, which is kind of rude in my opinion. I'm like, girl, people are just trying to be friendly and do like a normal social function and just say happy birthday,
People
Bella.
want to
Like,
celebrate you. Let
exactly. And
them be
I'm,
happy, girl.
oh gosh. Like, I remember in the first few parts of this chapter, I was getting so annoyed with how she was acting. I'm like, you need to. Everyone is excited because they want to celebrate you, especially the Cullen family, because they haven't had a birthday to celebrate in a while. So yeah, that's happening. Everyone at school is trying to wish her happy birthday. She keeps dismissing them, and Alice wants to throw a birthday party at the Cullen house, and Bella tries to do everything in her power just to not go. Which I'm like, what?
That's kind of rude.
I
Yeah, this was
know.
annoying me too.
She's so. Oh. I'm just like anger sounds. So, at one point they go to the Cullen house for the birthday party, and Bella's opening all her presents until she gets a paper cut, and then suddenly everything goes wrong. So Jasper, who is like the newest vampire who, you know, has agreed to Carlisle's like terms of being a vegetarian vampire and like is the newest addition to the Cullen family, he just could not handle this paper cut Bella has gotten, and he basically attacks her, and somehow, some way, Bella gets just like thrown into glass, and suddenly she has this big ass gash on her arm, and there's glass embedded in it, and everyone freaks out. And that's how the first chapter ends.
Very dramatic.
I have so many thoughts. One, I already mentioned how it was very annoying, like reading how Bella reacted to everyone like trying to celebrate her birthday. Like I said, for the Cullen family, this is like one of the first birthdays in a while that they actually get to celebrate. So obviously they're pretty excited about this. And then even like her parents, so Charlie was like doing his best to be like, you know, just like it's your birthday. And even Renee, her mom gave her like presents and stuff like that. And like even the classmates too, like they just wanted to wish her a happy birthday. I don't know why she's being so difficult.
Like, girl, I know you're older than your 100-year-old boyfriend now, but calm down. It's fine.
Oh man. But I did, so for notes of this chapter, I did mark down that there's a part when Bella and Edward are at school, and they explain that Edward managed to finesse his way so that he could have all his classes with Bella. And I'm like, I don't know how I feel about
I put that down too, that it's disgusting that these grown women are like fawning over Edward, who is supposed to be a child. Like he might be 17 or maybe 18, but he's still a student where you are in power. That's disgusting.
But I also just like, and this might be foreshadowing to like how they spent so much time together, but like I still think they do not need to spend that much time together. Like they need it, they don't have to be spending every single class together, in my opinion.
Speaking of how much time they've spent together, it confirms in this chapter that all of these events have occurred and it's only been a half a year, 6 months.
And like it's weird like realizing like how short of a time frame it is, and yet all the character, like everything is so dramatic, like dramatized, how they're like, oh, I love you so much. You are the only person who's important in my life and things like that. I'm like, it's been 6 months. But yeah, so there's that. And then there's also a subtle mention about the Cullens having money. And I was like, oh, is this the first time that they like acknowledge that? I don't remember if you saw that when you were reading the first chapter, Tori.
I don't think that they mentioned it unless maybe when Bella goes to their house for the first time, or maybe their cars, but...
So Bella says, Edward had a lot of money, and I didn't even want to think about how much. Money meant nothing, next to nothing, to Edward or the rest of the Cullens. It was just something that accumulated when you had unlimited time on your hands and a sister who had an uncanny ability to predict trends in the stock market. So I know we like had a theory that I think just because they have been alive for so long, they were able to accumulate a lot of money. But it also mentioned slightly that I guess Alice had a hand in trying to play the stock market a little bit. And that must have also been how they acquired money as well.
I think about the Cullen finances so much.
It is still like, a big it's question. It's a
common occurrence in my head to think about. Like, that makes so much sense, though.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, listen, it does.
If Carlyle's net worth is $34.1 billion in 2010, that's just Carlyle himself.
Yeah.
Alice is making bank off the stock market. How much is that bitch worth? How much is Esme worth? I need to know their collective net worth. They could run the world. I'm convinced.
The Cullen family themselves are an entire superpower. Like, they just have so much wealth and net worth, as Tori said. But I didn't realize that they'd mentioned that in this first chapter until like I actually read it. But that was something. And then, of course, the big question that I have is just like the fact that Jasper lost his shit because Bella had a paper cut. Meanwhile, a few months ago, when Bella was like practically a dead human vessel with blood all over and Jasper didn't like lose his shit then, like I still don't understand the like how these two instances had very different reactions, even though in both Bella is bleeding, but in one, when Bella was in the dance studio, I would say that she was bleeding even more compared to like the paper cut at their house. Maybe it's proximity because they were in a closer distance.
Maybe his guard was more down because he was in his home.
Yeah, it's possible that like maybe Jasper's guard was just down because he didn't have to be on like on high alert at that point. But I just wanted the Cullen family to be able to host this wonderful birthday party. They got Bella a new stereo and Emmett installed it in her truck so that Bella couldn't like refuse the gift. And I just wanted good things, and good things did not happen, it seems.
No, they did not.
Oh, is there anything else that you want to add for notes from chapter one?
I would just like to say that I'm very concerned that Renee is a kindergarten teacher and that she is responsible for the educational foundation for a shit ton of little children, because that woman can't even take care of herself
or her child
or her child, let alone if that was my child's teacher, I would be concerned.
Yeah, I was hoping that you would bring up Renee because it does talk a little bit about Renee in this. I do have a note about Renee, but that's going to be in a few chapters after this. But they also do mention very, very slightly about the Volturi. So Bella's like, what is the Volturi? And then Edward just goes to tell about how they're like a really old family and like well-respected within the vampire world. He also says that like Carlyle lived with them for a time in the very, very beginning of Carlyle's vampire life and things like that. So you do get a little bit of mention of the Volturi, and spoiler alert, you hear more about them later in this book, but not in this episode. That'll be in a future episode.
The last thing I think I have to say about this chapter is that it warms my heart that Alice and Charlie are like buddies. She's like, he's so excited when she comes over. He's like, tell Alice to come over, it's been a while. Bella's like, Dad, it's been 3 days.
Yeah, so while Bella was in her, I don't know, state of being where she just couldn't function without the assistance of others because of her injuries, Alice came over often to just help Bella with, you know, bathing,
showering,
and being a human and and all of those functions. So Charlie has become accustomed to Alice and likes her very, very much. Oh,
that's
and
so cute.
They're like, Alice and Charlie are literally the best characters in the entire
Twilight series. They really are. The friendship I didn't know I needed. So cute.
I don't think that was one of the pairings in one of the quizzes we did in the past where it was like, choose your favorite Twilight friendship. I don't think Alice and Charlie was one of the selections, but it should be because obviously there's proof of it
I'm gonna
here.
write
And
fan fiction about them just being best friends.
oh my gosh, you can write about like what happened while Alice was always over to help Bella.
Yes.
Because they don't go into detail. I'm like, I don't know what happens other than like the general description that they talk about. So there's
Alice
that.
watching baseball with Charlie and always knowing right before what ha what is gonna happen, and he's amazed that she just so happens to always know. All right, I gotta stop. I'm gonna start crying. All right, we gotta go on before the tears start welling up.
Well, anyway, so after chapter one, we get into chapter two, which is titled Stitches. And at this point, Carlisle is the only one who stays behind to tend to Bella's wounds while the rest of the family is outside trying to resituate themselves because everyone is just like, they're not having a good time. And while Bella and Carlisle are just like in the kitchen, they talk about more of Carlisle's past. They also talk about Edward's theory and thing about not having a soul, which Bella connects to his re the reasoning of why he just refuses to turn her into a vampire. And yeah, they talk a lot about like that kind of stuff. Mostly Carlisle's history, which I'm like, oh, Carlisle, my favorite vampire. And eventually Edward comes back to the kitchen to help Bella get cleaned up. And he takes her back to Charlie's place. And once they get there, they have like a slight argument, I would say. And Bella asks Edward to, well, one, she asks him if he's gonna stay the night, but Edward's like really on edge and doesn't seem like he's gonna stay. And they like part of their argument is that Bella's like, oh, you should stay the night because it's my birthday. And Edward's like, do you want to acknowledge your birthday or not? Because you keep telling me you don't. And I'm like, oh.
I know. I was like, ooh, sassy.
Oh.
I was like, but he's right. You can't always get what you want, girl.
I
What
was
do you
like,
want?
yeah, I wasn't, I definitely was on Edward's side when he said that. I was like, He said it. He said it. That's for sure. So Edwards ends up staying the night, obviously all of this without Charlie's knowledge, which I still can't. That idea, I cannot wrap that around my head. I'm like, I can't believe Charlie doesn't know that there's another being in his household, not including Bella. But like, yeah, so Edward stays over. Bella does mention that like they never do anything,
Charlie would disapprove of.
yeah, and that's because Edward is he doesn't want to take advantage of Bella, which is very
Chivalrous.
except for they do have like I guess what you would explain a passionate moment in her room, aka they were making out. But Bella notices that like this time that they like engaged in this type of action was like similar to when Edward had like last kissed Bella goodbye when they were dealing with James, which you can remember back from the first Twilight book. And so at this point, Bella's like, something is gonna go wrong and I can't figure out what it is. And I too was like, something bad is gonna happen. And I just feel really anxious as I get to this part. And that's how chapter two ends. It's just a lot of like arguing and Bella still really being annoying about the whole birthday thing.
I really like all of the Carlisle stuff in this chapter.
Me too.
Like, I love that he basically said the reason that he decided to not eat people is because if there is a god for vampires, maybe he's getting some credit. So, Catholic guilt is basically the only reason the Cullens don't eat people.
Which is very interesting of a concept. But it makes sense in Carlisle's view because his dad was a pastor. Like he's a pastor's son. So it makes sense that like the religious background would influence like his decision making or like his ability to figure out, at least for him, what he would consider right and wrong. But in this chapter, they also talk about how obviously we know that Edward was the first vampire that Carlisle turned into a vampire and also made kind of like join his clan. But he does say that Edward's mother, whose name is Elizabeth, She was the one who had died first, and in like her dying words or dying breath, she had told Carlyle that she wanted Carlyle to save Edward no matter what it took. And Carlyle interpreted that as like, oh, it felt like she knew that I was not like a regular human. And so he kind of saw it as a sign like, oh, I guess I should turn this child into like a companion of mine, or like have somebody have a partner through this like vampire journey, because I'm sure Carlyle was very lonely.
I can imagine.
Very,
It was
very
also
lonely.
interesting seeing him talk about like the Spanish flu too, especially after like, currently being in a pandemic. Like he basically was saying like he felt so bad having to go home while there were people like dying in the hospitals. Why didn't he just go work in two separate hospitals? How would they know?
I mean, there's a lot of it's funny that you say that, because I have been seeing on like social media, mostly Twitter, of like this actually happened or started because people were talking about how, and this is like me, here's a spoiler. Jasper's background isn't exactly the best before he became a vampire. And so a lot of people were saying, because the Carlyle clan had been alive for so long, like why didn't they do more to kind of like help society, especially as like big things and big changes were happening. And there were valid points in that, but I think also at the time, like Carlyle was only one person. Like there are stories about like a single vampire or a single being like causing massacres or like chaos in like a town or something like that, but I don't know. I think it's just like the theory of like numbers, like the number of good vampires that could actually do good. I don't think it was high. It doesn't seem like it's a high number.
Yeah.
But that's my reasoning. Maybe I'll change my mind, or like maybe we'll have a better answer to that kind of question. But yeah, it was interesting to hear like Carlyle's side of how he dealt with like the Spanish flu. He kind of did he would do like the later shifts in the day, and like no one was really paying, like the doctors weren't really paying attention to their patients because like they were so overstaffed and or understaffed and like overworked. And I was like, I'm just trying to be a good person and
I
save
wonder
these
how you're dealing
lives.
with COVID.
I wonder. And then I'm like, please, somebody write a fan fiction about
Carlisle, what city are you in?
Carlyle, what city are you in? What hospital are you helping the COVID
Let's write the
patients?
fan fiction. Oh no, am I going to start writing fan fiction again? Got too many
Ooh,
ideas in my head. Let's pull it
we aren't
out.
even on the fan fiction episode of this
Oh
podcast
boy, wait till we get there, buddy.
yet. Wait till we get there. But yeah, so basically that's how chapter two goes. I don't really have much notes except for it's refreshing to hear about Carlyle, and you learn a little bit more about Edward's past. And that's about it.
There was something in this chapter that kind of made me laugh. It was after Bella was bleeding everywhere, Esme was cleaning with straight bleach. And at first I was wondering, is that to like try to get rid of the smell? But that wouldn't do it. And then I was wondering, like, do you think maybe she just forgot how to sanitize things properly because her family doesn't get sick, so she doesn't remember how to clean things right? Also, do they clean? Because I can't imagine them like Esme, mop in hand,
Yeah,
with her mop up on the ceiling,
but
like.
it's also like, so Carlyle was removing a lot of glass shards, and then like there were a lot of, I'm assuming, gauze or bandages or cloth used to kind of sop up Bella's blood. But after that's all been collected in like a bowl, Carlyle ended up catching it on fire. And I'm like, when I read the part about Esme trying to clean up the mess after Bella got hurt, part of me was like, are they gonna catch that thing, like that spot on fire? Because
What
she's
if they
using
do?
straight bleach. I'm like,
Yeah, I was like, why the hell is she doing that? Because I'm sure they can still smell the blood, or is she just dumb?
I don't know, maybe. Maybe like just cleaning with straight up bleach was like an old, old wives thing back when like Esme was a human and she just like kept that with her. I don't know.
I genuinely like to believe that anytime they do something that's a little odd like that, it's because they're just so out of touch with modern times that they don't understand what they're doing is weird. Or like they're just, they don't remember being human, so they don't get what they're doing is weird.
They're like, what? What is a Swiffer? A Swiffer Webjet. So, chapter three is titled The End. Dun, dun,
Dun, dun,
dun. I
dun.
wonder what's gonna happen in this chapter. Literally, like, I think this is where I felt the most anxious and like the most sad.
Yeah.
I felt the most sad. So, in the beginning of this chapter, things are still not okay after the birthday incident, and Edward takes Bella to the woods again. Every time they go to the woods or the forest or some sort of secluded area where there are trees, I'm like, well, something weird's gonna happen. So,
Can't they
yeah.
just everywhere go somewhere normal?
No, they can't.
Go to the mall or something, like
They
normal kids.
can't. They really can't.
Just go for a drive.
Well, I mean, after you find out what happens after he takes her to the woods, then it'd be like maybe the drive wasn't a good idea. So, anyway, Edward takes Bella into the woods and he tells her that, quote, this isn't gonna work. This being like their relationship and just Bella acknowledging that are like the vampires of the Cullen family exist and vampires are thing, blah blah blah. He's like, nope, this is not good, this is not safe for you. And he says that the family's leaving, and then he fucking leaves her in the woods.
Yeah, what's up with that?
He disappears and leaves her in the woods, basically. And Bella is obviously in shock, and she like is wandering around trying to find Edward, and it gets very, very dark. And because Bella at this point hasn't come back, Charlie ends up sending a search party. And Sam Yuli? Yuli? Is that how you pronounce
Yuli.
it? Yoli? Sam
Yo
Yoli?
Yoli. That might just be my accent. Yoli.
Sam Yuli? Yuli?
Sam
Sam.
Yuli. Sam. Okay, I don't know how to say it. Don't listen to me. Sam Yuli.
Sam Yuli. So Sam of the La Push Reservation ends up finding Bella, and yeah, it's like a whole search party where they're trying to find Bella in the woods. And the only reason they were able to figure out where Bella was is because there was this note that was very conveniently left for Charlie to find, which was pretty much forged by either Edward or Alice, so that Charlie would find it and would basically have like the directions or note of where Bella would be at this point. So yeah, Bella finally gets home. She's a mess and really can't function with this loss, which I don't blame her. But yeah, she just becomes like this soulless zombie, and time passes, and suddenly we go from September to January. And yeah, that's how chapter three ends. It's so sad. The only few notes that I have for this is that I couldn't believe that Edward just like fucking left her at the woods in the woods. He
Yeah, I agree. Like, it says that he left her like in view of the house on the trail, but he knows that she's gonna like be dumb and wander, like.
Which is exactly what she did. And I don't even remember, like, yeah, she just like kept wandering and it got darker, and like she didn't even realize how dark it had gotten. I guess she fell over because she just was in such a state of shock, or was pretty or probably exhausted from like just wandering. And then that's when Sam found her. But yeah, I still am like, this bitch, well, in parentheses, Edward just left her in the woods. How irresponsible. Yeah, so there's that. I also had a note like, I don't know, it doesn't sit well with me knowing that, like, and I think it might have been Alice or Edward, one of them, like, forged a note. Like, he basically set it up so that he would just hope that Carlisle would be able to, or not Carlisle, that Charlie would be able to find Bella in the woods. Like,
Yeah,
I
like
don't
what if he couldn't? What if she was just gone?
know. That is so irresponsible on Edward's end. Like, why couldn't he just tell her this, like, I don't know, at home?
Honestly, on the couch, just sit her down. She can
Yeah.
curl up and cry on the couch.
But yeah, and the other note is just the fact that Bella is now a soulless vessel. starting from this point until a few chapters. And yeah, it just reminded me of how we all felt in the first few months of 2020, just soulless vessels of ourselves,
Honestly.
just trapped, like stuck at home, feeling hopeless. Yeah, I think the biggest note or point in this chapter was that, like, I was so upset at how, like, selfish Edward was in this situation. Like, he claims that he did that because he was trying to help Bella, but I was like, that was not helping Bella. Like, the way that he told her that they were leaving or that this wasn't going to work could have been done in a better situation. Like, I don't.
He basically did what she did to Charlie because he said to her the only thing that he knew would get her to go. He said, "I don't want you."
And she was like, you
She was like,
don't
"Shit,
want
okay, bitch,
me. You don't
what?"
want me. And then I also was like, oh man, Charlie, if I were Charlie, I would never let, like, I would never accept Edward.
Charlie is the star of this chapter and the star of my heart. I love
Girl.
him so much. He is the sweetest thing ever. He's like running through the woods, calling her name. He picks up Bella, even though he can barely carry her, covers her up. He's like rushing to the phone to stop it from ringing so she doesn't wake up. He's just the best. I love him.
He's just trying to take care of his daughter, and it's so heartbreaking to read because, like, Charlie loves his daughter so much, and he doesn't deserve all this pain and suffering.
I wish Bella would give him the credit that she gives to her mom because she speaks of Renee like she's some like goddess, but she is not. I think you know which of the parents is my favorite, if you can't tell.
If you haven't realized already, I think you can tell which one is Tori's favorite parent of Bella.
Also, Charlie's like a little pissed that Carlisle left and didn't tell anybody. He's all grumbly. He's like, a little warning would have been nice. Carlisle left and I didn't get any warning. A warning would have been nice.
He's like, my boo left and he didn't say goodbye. How dare he?
I think the last note I really have is that Edward says that Alice was trying to convince Jasper to go to Alaska to visit the Denali vampires. And if I were them, my God, I would be sick of these Collins and their drama. One of them's always running to me, crying because, I almost killed a human. My girlfriend's doing this. And I would be so sick. I'd be like, please leave. Do not. And then Laurent came. He's like, the Cullens sent me. They're probably like, oh God, another one.
Not another one of the cousins. I mean, I guess in the same vein that I was like, man, Charlie must be fucking sick of Edward and all his shit.
I would be.
Denali family must be sick of the Cullens and all their shit.
They'd see just people walking towards them in the distance, and they'd just be like, ugh, here we go again.
The Cullens. Yeah, especially in like the time frame that this was only like a few months apart, and they just keep coming back. They
All
keep
of this
coming back.
happens in 6 months, and in that time, they've bothered them like three or four times.
Yep, and it
These
doesn't
poor
stop.
people just trying to live peacefully in Alaska, not bother anybody, and all this drama is coming from these American vampires.
Ah, goodness.
Oh, wait, Alaska is in America too. God, I'm stupid.
These mainland American
Yeah, that
vampires.
one.
Okay, trying to get more sad. So, after chapter three is chapter four, which is titled Waking Up. And yeah. Charlie, he has had enough of Bella being very miserable and unhappy, and he basically tells her that he's going to send her to Florida to be with her mom because he figures maybe that is what's going to finally make her happy, which I understand his reasoning in that. But Bella's like, no, this Forks is my home. I want to stay here. And I'm like, girl, are you sure? Because you've been in like emotional turmoil ever since you came back. Are you sure? So she tries to make like a bargain with her dad that she'll go hang out with the gals again in order to do something outside of the house. But in that same conversation, Charlie's like, hey, I understand that you're having a lot of grief and you're dealing with loss and it's really tough and you should probably see a therapist. And Bella's like, she called, she was like, you want me to see a shrink? And I was like, oh, this is very outdated. Like
It's
it makes.
amazing to see how outdated this book is. There's a lot of points where I've written down like
Oh,
how
yes.
outdated
Me
it is.
too. Me too. Yeah. When I read that line, I was like, oh, this is a very outdated book. I like, you sometimes forget until you read like language in that way. But yeah, Bella's like, you want me to see a shrink? And I'm like, so yeah, it seems that Bella doesn't want to go to therapy. That's a conversation for another day. But anyway, she, like I said, tries to bargain with her dad that she'll hang out with the gals in order to get out of the house. And so Bella tries to ask Jessica if she'll go see a movie with her. And Jessica's like, oh, wow, you're talking to me now? Okay. She's like very hesitant at first to say yes, but eventually she does. So they go to Port Angeles and they watch this zombie movie. But Bella just can't sit still. Like she's like constantly getting up to get drinks and popcorn and just like, I don't even think she like stays for the entirety, the like the last portion of the movie. Like she gets up and she leaves. She like says it's because the movie scared her, but like no, she just has other things on her mind. And after the movie, they go to McDonald's. They
Oh
like
yeah, what's up
they
with that?
start walking to McDonald's, and I was like, that is a very weird place to go for food after a movie. But
That's a very high school thing to do, though.
yeah, that's true.
Sometimes it's hard to like remember that they're like 17, 18 years old. But we were going to like Steak and
Steak and
Shake after
Shake.
the movies.
We didn't go to McDonald's. We went to Steak and Shake. Wow, that really unlocked the memory.
I
Yeah.
drove by a Steak and Shake today and I was like, wow, they're all closed. So
Oh,
sad.
oh. They're like matchstick shaped French fries. Oh, delicious. But yeah, so on their way to McDonald's, and they walk there instead of driving, even though Jessica has her car. And on the walk over, Bella thinks that she sees one of the guys who like was messing with her from the last time that she was in Port Angeles, the time when Edward had to save her because she was in danger. And she like for some reason thinks it's a good idea to approach these guys to see if the one person that she thinks she knows or recognizes is that person from that incident. So as she gets closer to see this guy, she sees like this premonition or vision or ghost of Edward, and Edward's like, you need to go back to Jessica. Meanwhile, Jessica's freaking the fuck out and it's like, Bella, what are you doing? This is not safe. And Bella's of course ignoring her because Bella, she is so she's something. And yeah, eventually Bella does get to the group of guys. She realizes that it's not the guy, and she's like, oh, I'm sorry, I thought you were somebody that I knew. She gets back to Jessica. They go to McDonald's. Jessica is not having a good time and is like very angry. And then they drive back to Forks. My notes for this is that Charlie's just such a caring dad and he deserves the world, as we talked about previously. And yeah, Bella is just so like reading Bella doing these actions and going through this was like really frustrating because, like, I just like you get angry because you're like, Bella, you need to stop acting so irresponsibly. But I also understand why she continued to do so because she's like, but Edward, I can see my Edward. And I'm like, yes, but no, don't do that.
I would have been so mad if I was Jessica. That's like one of my biggest fears is like being in a dangerous situation where somebody could harm me. And like if my friend was just walking up to these people, I'd be like, all right, bitch, you go have fun. I'm going to get some chicken nuggets.
Oh my God. And it's funny that we say this because, like, the last time they were in Port Angeles, we were talking about how outrageous it was that the friends just like left Bella. Yeah. Because they were literally about to like go back to Forks without Bella because they couldn't find her. Meanwhile, you have this kind of situation where we're like, actually, if Jessica just wanted to get up and go, like, I wouldn't blame her.
I definitely wouldn't blame her.
Because I would be stressed out too, especially if like you're the person that you're with is like not complying or like, it's just like really stressful. So I don't blame Jessica for being upset at Bella afterwards.
Yeah, especially going up to like these strange men at a bar. Like that means they're at least 21 and they're drunk.
And they're trying to possibly hurt you. It's just like a recipe for disaster.
Yeah.
That's how that chapter goes. Is there anything else that you want to add?
No, the only thing I really had is about Charlie basically saying like she needs to get over it, which he's like right. He was like, I lost you and your mom and I got over it. It's literally been like what, 5 months since he left and she's still moping like this. That's the entire time that they were together, basically.
And this is why I was saying, like, they shouldn't have spent so much time together in the beginning because, like, it makes it hard to, like, I don't know, just like be able to exist as your own individual person.
Yeah.
So it didn't help that they were like spending pretty much 24 hours a day together. Like, it just, it's not healthy.
Yeah.
It's not healthy, I think. But yeah, so those are our notes for chapter 4. And then we get to chapter 5, which is called Cheater. And in this chapter, the very first part, you find out that Bella does work somewhere part-time. So I'm like, oh, okay, so Bella does do things that isn't just spending time with Edward all the time. So she works part-time at the Newton family sports shop. And in the beginning, Mike's trying to get Bella to head home early because like it's just a slow day. And there are two shoppers who are talking about like these really weird bear sightings that they saw, or that the one person saw during a hike. And so that's just like hinting to something that's going to happen very
Dun dun
soon.
dun.
Yeah, so Bella goes home. She does whatever she can in her power to avoid going home right away because she's just not having a good time. And she ends up taking this detour into a random neighborhood when she sees these two motorbikes. And then she remembers that Charlie dislikes motorbikes because they're not safe and they're really reckless. And then she's like, oh, Edward said something about telling me not to do anything dangerous and reckless. So what am I going to do? I'm going to break that promise that Edward told me to keep. And I'm going to do something dangerous and reckless. So she ends up trying to buy these bikes from the family that was selling them, and she ends up getting them for free, and remembers that Jacob Black could possibly help her fix the bikes up, and so yeah, she the timeline in which she goes bike, she calls up Jacob, goes to Jacob's place, and explains the whole situation. I was like, dang girl, like how much time did you have?
She's on a mission.
I guess. So, yeah, she immediately goes to Jacob's house after she asks her dad, Charlie, like what's the address or how to get there. And then both Bella and Jacob like sneak around Billy so that they can get, so that they can be alone in the garage and Bella can explain her story and stuff like that. So, Bella says that she wants to ride these bikes and to keep it a secret from Charlie and also Billy, because they know it's dangerous and they probably wouldn't let her. And Jacob, because he loves her so much, is like, I'll keep your secret. I'll do anything for you, Bella. He like doesn't charge her for basically giving him this project. And in return, Bella's like, I'll pay for all the parts. But this bitch is using her college money to pay for these bike parts. And yeah, that's how chapter 5 ends. Honestly, I don't have much notes except for all the times that I'm like, Jacob loves Bella so much. He's like, he has such a big crush on her. And he's like, I will do anything for you.
My only notes literally say Bella is being an angsty teen and it's funny. She wants to be reckless and wild. Ooh, woo.
Ooh, woo. Yeah, I just have like parts where Jacob is just has a big crush on Bella. I also bookmarked the part where Bella said that she's using her college money to pay for the parts of this motorcycle. And but then later on, you find out the motorcycle parts are just like a little over 100. And I'm like, that isn't even that much money.
That part cracked me up. It made me think of those memes where they're like looking at something really tall, like a skyscraper, and they're like, that's gotta be at least 10 feet tall. He's like, it's gonna be really expensive. Like, I'm talking like maybe more than $100. I was like,
What?
no! Maybe more than $100.
I was like, whoa.
Bella's hiding her checkbook in her coat pocket. And I'm like,
yeah, her what? Checkbook. Just another sign of the time. She's like waving her checkbook at him. Oh, like, I got gosh. The money, baby.
I'm telling you, you don't realize how like dated this book is until you read it and you're like, whoa, that's pretty dated. But yeah, so not many notes from chapter 5. Pretty straightforward. Bella wants to be reckless. She figures out a way how to do that. And that's what happens. The next chapter is chapter 6, which is called Friends. And Bella, this is like the same day where she is at Jacob's house. So Bella meets two of Jacob's friends, who are Quill and Embry. And they chat a little bit in Jacob's garage. And the two friends also play around a bit with Jacob because they know Jacob has a little crush, more like a big crush, on Bella, which is like so typical like teen interaction, I guess. And yeah, later Bella gets home, she realizes how refreshing it was to like hang out with Jacob and not be sad for a little bit, which I'm like, oh, that's good. You're finally feeling other feelings. That's healthy. But like, because she enjoyed being with Jacob and his friends so much, she's like, oh, I have to go again so I can feel happy for a few hours. And I'm like, oh, I know that feeling. So yeah, she tells her dad that she's going to go to Jacob's house again tomorrow. And then later that night, Bella talks about how she's been having like really bad dreams, a lot of them ending in her screaming. And at this point, she's had so many that her dad just stopped checking on her because he just kind of knows Bella is going through it. She's really going through it. She mentions that like because she's been so lifeless in the past few months, like her classmates at school are just like simply ignoring her, and then like even her teachers are like brushing her off as if she doesn't exist. But then she talks about how like a year ago this is like exactly what she wanted, not being noticed and like just like as if she wasn't there. But then now, because she's reflecting on it, you know, after everything has happened, she's like, actually, I don't like this. I don't like being ignored and pretend like I'm not here. In this chapter, she also mentions that like the first day of school for her when she joined Forks High School was January 19th, meaning the Twilight book started in January.
That's weird.
I was like, what? Because like they talk about homecoming, which is typically in the fall, and prom.
I don't think Stephanie Meyer thought about that very well.
I don't.
Stephanie Meyer, explain.
I was like, there's like this timeline doesn't make sense because homecoming is in the fall and prom is in the spring. So if she joined in the spring, yeah, in January of whatever year, then it just doesn't make sense. It just doesn't make sense. I literally was like racking my brain when I realized this part. So yeah, I was very confused when I read that. But anyway, back to the summary. Bella attempts to be like present and social at lunchtime. And she like talks about how Jessica and her went to the movies, and then also brings up how when Bella was working at the Newton Family Sports Shop, both she and Mike overheard the hikers talking about the bear sighting, because Angela also talks about the bear sighting. And yeah, everyone's like, oh, are you back, Bella? Is she back from the dead? Kind of. The answer is kind of. My notes for that is that I like wasn't comfortable reading the parts where Bella and Jacob were like flirting a little. I was like, that makes me uncomfortable. Also, there's a fucking line in this chapter where Leah is described as being beautiful in an exotic way.
Yeah, I saw that too. I was like, what do you mean in an exotic way? She's Native American.
I read that line and was like, oh, no.
I know. I saw that too and I was like, and didn't they say like her eyelashes were like feathers? Mm-hmm. I was like, that's a weird thing.
That
to
whole
say.
Entire okay. description of Leah, I didn't like it. I didn't like it one bit.
There's also a part in the book too where she is talking about Jacob's skin color, and she's saying that his skin color is so beautiful and she's envious of it.
Yeah,
like, girl,
yep.
It's just weird how, like, she talks about, like, the Quileute people.
It's very strange. I was like, I'm uncomfortable reading this. But there's another part that Tori's gonna love this, but Bella talks about how she gets an email from her mom, Renee. Yep. And then she says that the email reads more like Renee is doing a journal entry instead of sending an email to another person. And I was like, this just adds to Tori's like whole bit about Renee being such an irresponsible mom and like only caring about herself and daughter.
I have mom of the year written in my book next to that line.
I literally wrote Renee still being a selfish mom, LOL.
Wow. Who'd have thunk it?
And Jessica is still slightly upset with Bella after that incident in Port Angeles. And I don't blame her. I'm still like, yeah, that was pretty horrible.
Yeah, I'd be
that's pretty too. Horrible. And then the point that I brought up earlier about the fact that Bella talks about how she started going to school at Forks High School on January 19th. And I'm like, wait, so you mean to tell me that the first Twilight book started in January? That timeline doesn't make any sense.
You're meaning to tell me that these teenagers are hanging out in the middle of the woods, in the middle of Washington in like February? Mm-hmm.
Apparently.
I don't buy it.
Apparently. It doesn't make sense because of various things. I think what really threw me off is homecoming. If they had just said the only dance they were preparing for was prom, that would have made more sense. But no.
Didn't they have like the winter holidays and stuff too in the book, or am I wrong?
I don't know. But homecoming is always in the fall.
Yeah.
Like there's no getting around that. There is no two ways around that. Homecoming is always in the fall season. But then it also talks about how Bella and Edward had been together for a while, so no one at school was shocked by them being together. But then if Bella started school in January and prom was only a few months after, and it's a new school year now,
what's a while?
I don't know. It like, I'm like, what do you mean a while?
Maybe we should be reading this from the lens of like a teenager, because to be fair, it's kind of long for a kid's relationship. Like,
I don't know, is it? I have no idea. I have no idea. But yeah, so those were my notes for chapter 6, mostly because like there's a lot of gaps that I'm like, this doesn't make much sense at all.
Yeah, one of the things that really bothered me, like going off of Renee not even checking on her daughter, I think you said it before too, but nobody's checking. Like even the teachers are like glancing over, not paying attention. This kid's obviously struggling. Yeah. And nobody's
doing anything. Extremely depressed and like just not coping well, like even if they don't realize that it's because of like, you know, Bella getting out of a relationship, like it just seems like the adults aren't being very like aware.
Like I get that this was 2006, but it's not like you couldn't see that something was mm-hmm. happening. Like I was just so amazed.
Yeah, it's almost
all of her friends too. Mm-hmm. It like upset me. Like I can't imagine if I had been like in a relationship like that and then was so depressed and then my friends were so rude mm-hmm. to me coming back. That's why Angela's the hero of this chapter, because she was so kind.
But I also think Angela didn't really help in like trying to reintegrate Bella. Like it seems
you're right,
it actually seems like Angela was still following the rest of the friends where they were kind of just like staying quiet and ignoring Bella until she, you know, until Bella started to speak on her own. But
you're right.
I don't like how the friends and the teachers and just like the other adults except for Charlie like handled Bella being in this really like depressive state. Like that's definitely not going to help anybody feel better if they don't feel supported like in their friendships or other relationships. But that's just my 2 cents on how to deal with that kind of situation.
Yeah, like they're like they were shocked whenever she spoke to them. Like the one girl's mouth was like hanging open.
Oh my god, there's even like a part with Lauren, and I'm surprised you didn't bring up anything about Lauren yet.
I was just about to say it. Lauren. She literally walks by Bella and goes, "Oh joy, Bella's back." Bitch, what do you mean?
Bitch, I hate Lauren with my every fiber of my being, and I still can't believe they didn't include her in the movie.
I know. There's a little clue here, though, because, listen, now I have a headcanon. She chopped off all her hair and has a pixie cut. It's 2006. Lauren's a lesbian. She's in love with Bella. It's obvious. Why else is she so pressed about what Bella's doing? She's in love with her, and it's so
clear. The pixie haircut for me.
Honestly, if you can't tell, I'm just trying to make Twilight incredibly gay. That's my mission in life, is to make everything as queer as possible in this book.
But, like, there is totally, like, meaning and reasoning behind it, so I understand.
why else is she so mad?
It makes sense. Still a shame that they never included Lauren into the movies, but, you know. So we are going to move on to Chapter 7, which is titled Repetition. And what happens in this chapter? It starts off with Bella still being really haunted by Edward's last words, and she decides to drive to the Cullen house in order to feel something. And at this point, I was like, girl, that's not a good idea. Also, I'm like, is she even going to be able to find this place? Because she always talked about having trouble, you know, getting to the Cullen house, which is why Edward was usually the one who drove every time they went. But yeah, so she gets to the Cullen house and it makes her feel worse, and she immediately wants to go see Jacob so she can feel happy again. And I'm like, oh no, this is the start of Bella using Jacob because she's so sad. Yeah, so she goes to see Jacob, and Jacob asks Bella, would she still hang out with him even after the bikes are done? Because I mean, that's a valid question. The only time that Bella got to see Jacob was, like, I think the last time they saw each other was when Jacob went to the prom to warn Bella.
Yeah, it was.
So I understand Jacob being like, are you going to come back even after the bikes are done? I'm like, aw, he just wants to know if they're going to still be friends to hang out. Yeah, so, and then time passes randomly, and then Mike suddenly asks Bella if she would go to the movies. Bella's like, I'm not dating. I'm not into dating. And basically tells him that, like, she would be okay going with friends. But even then, I'd be like, Mike, I don't like this game that you're playing at right now.
He doesn't waste a damn minute.
And, like, and it wasn't even that.
Like, literally the day after she says something to him again for the first time, he's like, hey, want to go on a date, yeah, girl?
Yeah, I'm like, what the hell? And it's also not that, not that long ago that Mike and Jessica broke up either. I'm like, this boy can't quit. He doesn't quit.
Girl code. Oh,
gosh.
Bella is exempt from dating that boy for the rest of her life.
And I mean, I don't even think she wants to anyway. So it's fine. It's fine. But yeah, more time passes and Bella gets a call from Jacob, and Jacob's like, the bikes are finished. So Bella's obviously very excited and eager to go see the bikes. So they take a drive to this area in La Push where they go to like an open road. And on the way over, they see these three people who like jump off of a very high point of a cliff. And Bella's like, are they okay? We have to call the ambulance. And Jacob's like, Bella, calm down. It's safe. They're just cliff jumping. It's a hobby we do here in La Push. And I'm like, what?
He's like laughing at her.
He's like, Bella, it's normal. Don't freak out over it. And I'm like, that's normal. It's so weird.
He's like, we don't exactly have a mall here.
Bella like asks Jacob a lot about cliff jumping, and then is like, oh, I should do cliff jumping because that also fits in Edward's requirements of reckless and dangerous activities that I probably shouldn't do, but I'm gonna do anyway because I have a goal. And so Jacob's like, yeah, we can go cliff jumping, but like we'll just go off of the lower points of the cliff that are slightly less dangerous. But knowing Bella, everything's dangerous, so I don't trust that. I don't trust that one bit. They eventually learn that one of the one of the people who was in that like trio who were jumping off the cliff was Sam. I'm not even going to say his last name because it's going to be another 5 minutes of us going, Uli, Uli. And when Jacob tells Bella that, you know, Sam was part of that group, then Bella notices that Jacob is like very upset and angry every time he like brings it up. So Bella's like, why, what's wrong? Like, is something bothering you? So Jacob tells Bella that one of the two friends that Bella met in his garage, Embry, suddenly like stopped communicating with him and Quill and is now part of Sam's gang. They also talk about how this La Push gang is a gang, but they do a gang for good, if that makes sense. So they try to keep the peace instead of cause havoc. And Jacob just doesn't like that. He's like, something is up, but I can't tell what. And he has like tried to ask his dad about it, but his dad's like, you'll find out soon. Hint, hint, nudge, nudge. And I'm like, poor baby Jacob, he doesn't realize.
Doesn't know what's about to hit.
But I'm also like, how does he not realize? He knows the story, so he could just put two and two together.
He doesn't believe
it. Yeah, but like, what?
Wait, does Bella believe this? Because I'm very confused, because during part of it, she's like, who do these people think they are? They're the werewolves. What do you mean? Like, she seems so confused as to what's happening. Like, she doesn't know.
And I'm like, Jacob told you the story. And I'm also like, if you understand that there are vampires that exist, then werewolves isn't too far from the truth.
Which, yeah, that's why I'm real
me confused. Too. I was like, I'm very confused as to why the two characters are very confused. I'm like, vampires exist, so wouldn't it also make sense that werewolves would also exist? But yeah, so they go through that. The only notes that I have is that, like I said before, it's weird that Jacob didn't consider the whole wolf aspect in his little dilemma, because I'm like, I think I would, especially because he talks about how Sam like treats Jacob well, but Jacob suspects it's because like he's part of the Black family and they have like this tradition of being like, you know, the head chiefs in their tribe. And I still would be like, you should connect the wolf thing with the tribe story and then you would make sense of it.
I don't think he's very smart.
I mean, he is only 16, 15? 16. Yeah, 16. He's only 16. Another note I had, I put more Bella and Jacob flirting, gross.
Honestly.
And icky. Then the last note I had for this is that in the one part of this chapter, there's a line where it says, oh crap, I want to find it so I can quote it exactly. It made me very uncomfortable. Let me find it. Oh, it said, okay, he laughed, a throaty sound.
Ew, what is that? Ew, what would that sound
like? I don't know,
like?
I don't even want to try and make that sound because I'm scared.
I'm scared. Mom, come get me, I'm scared.
But yeah, it's weird. They also talk about how Bella's like extremely pale compared to Jacob. And then he like says that she's like a little porcelain doll. I was like, oh, I hate this. I hate this so much.
Yeah, that was kind of gross to me. You want to know what that kind of reminded me of? Did you see that TikTok where the girl is like trying to be sexy and her boyfriend's like, oh yeah, you silly goose. You're so silly. That's what it reminded me of. Oh yeah, you little porcelain doll. You're so porcelain.
My favorite thing about that was how they spelled the word sexy, because it was spelled like sexy.
Sexy.
That's what I'm going to name this episode. Sam, Yuli, you silly goose.
Literally the only note I have for chapter 7 is what if Bella like pulled up to the Cullen house and they were all just still there? They never left. They're all just like chilling in the house, like nothing happened. She's like, what the hell?
I consider that too, because like they always kept to themselves anyway. So yeah.
Why was I half expecting that to be
even though we already knew what's gonna happen. Well, you know, we just go through a Mandela effect and what we thought happened actually didn't happen. Yeah, it's possible. Yeah, so that's all we have for chapter 7. And then we move on to chapter 8, which is called Adrenaline. And you can guess where this is going to go. So this chapter starts off with Bella and Jacob finally getting to ride these motorcycle bikes. And Bella is really bad at it, which is expected because she is just not good with physical activity or like active things, it seems. But eventually they get it to work and Bella's suddenly riding. And then she sees Ghost Edward and Bella's losing her shit because she's really excited. And she's like, my plan worked. I did something reckless and dangerous and Ghost Edward appeared. And I'm like, this is a very weird coping mechanism that Bella has instilled.
Really unhealthy.
It's a really interesting coping mechanism that she's have, that she's used. But yeah, so all is well because she's seeing Edward's ghost and she's riding this bike until the road starts to curve and Bella hasn't found out or learned how to turn yet. So she eventually gets thrown off the bike and guess what? She gets a big gash on her forehead and Jacob goes to her really quickly, freaks out because he's like, you are bleeding a lot. And he like takes his shirt off to cover up the blood and they go to the ER and Bella gets stitches again. How many stitches is it? Oh, wait. How long does it take until you get stitches removed?
I have no clue. I've never had stitches, surprisingly. I
haven't either. Because she got stitches back in September for her birthday
probably
party.
Just a couple weeks, I would assume.
So I guess her September wounds would have healed by then, or like she wouldn't have those stitches still. But yeah, she goes to the ER, gets another set of stitches, this time on her forehead, and Jacob's like, we should probably take a break from the motorcycle. Within all this like craziness happening, Bella fucking lies to her dad about how she has this big ass gash on her forehead. I would not, if I were Charlie, I would, obviously he didn't buy her story, but like I would be even more concerned that Bella is getting like still physically, still getting hurt physically, especially in her current state where she's just like not emotionally okay. I would be like, Bella, are you okay? I forget the story. I think he says that at first Bella tells her dad that she like tripped on something in Jacob's garage and like hit her head on a hammer. I think that's what she said.
Yeah, that was the original one.
And then she like changes the story and she's like, oh, we were hiking and I fell and hit my head.
I think she gets hurt twice. The first one she's like, oh, I tripped and fell on a hammer, and then the second time he's like, you need to stop hanging around the garage, and she's like, no, this time we were hiking.
But speaking of hiking, because of the fact that Bella and Jacob aren't going on the bikes anytime soon, Bella's like, oh, I know what we can do, Jacob, we can go to this meadow I went to once before. I don't like that Bella keeps going to these places that like remind her of Edward, like these key places that remind her of Edward. I'm like, this doesn't seem healthy. This doesn't seem healthy. Like, this is gonna trigger her more than like help her. So Bella and Jacob try to find the meadow. They don't end up finding it, and yeah, that chapter literally ends with like them not finding it and Jacob being like, it's okay, we'll try again next time and we'll find it. And that's how that chapter ends. That's how the
There's a part is. Of this chapter that makes me very uncomfortable. When she gashes her head open, he takes off his shirt to like cover her wound, and she's like, you're kind of beautiful. You're kind of beautiful? What do you mean? Ma'am, that's a child. I know he's 6'5", but I promise.
I don't like all these subtle moments where they're like essentially flirting with each other. I don't like that. I don't like this. This is not healthy. This is not good. For my notes, I put for lack of better wording, Bella has truly lost her marbles, which is true. Her marbles are all over the floor and they need to be recollected. Yeah, I made that note too. I put Bella calls Jacob beautiful at one point and I just find it really weird.
Yeah, it is really weird.
It is so strange.
Especially because she knows that he likes her. It's mm-hmm. like she's leading him on to like get what she wants.
Exactly. And there's a part where they like hug and they hug. I think that might have been in the previous chapter, but like she says that like she, it's like refreshing again for her to like have this kind of interaction that she hasn't had in a while. And then she goes back and is like, but this is for friendship. And I'm like,
She's like, well, it's friendship for me.
And I'm like,
like, girl, you know how he feels.
Mm-hmm. It's like so unfair that she's literally taking advantage of Jacob in this situation. I'm like, Jacob, you poor baby.
I know. I feel bad. Also, I don't understand, like, the logic in going back to the meadow, because when she went to the house, she didn't get to get the hallucinations like she had hoped. Mm-hmm. Like, she thought that the memory is what was going to trigger the hallucinations. But when she discovered that it's the adrenaline, what is going to the meadow going to do?
I think she just, like,
make sad.
Yeah, I mean, and that's what I mean. Like, Bella already has figured out that the formula for her to see her ghost or premonition of Edward is if she does something dangerous and reckless, going back to these places that just, like, remind her of Edward and the Cullen family, or just, like, Edward, like, that's not going to help. That's not helping your cause or your mission. It's, like, going to trigger you and cause you more pain.
Yeah. And it's not just, like, a little stroll in the woods. Like, to go to this meadow is, like, an over 6 mile hike into a meadow just to, what, stand there and then turn around and hike another 6 miles back? Mm. Like, why is Jacob not questioning, like, why do you know this one very specific spot in the woods and we have to hike 7 miles to get there? And
she also finally used her perk of working at a sporting goods store, and bought hiking boots for this reason. But yeah, there's a lot of things that I'm like, this is not a healthy coping mechanism, Bella, or like, this doesn't really make sense. And yeah, things of that nature. Is there any other notes that you wanted to add for chapter 8?
No, I'm okay. Good.
Yeah, and that pretty much sums up what chapters 1 through 8 were about. Are there any last thoughts about just, like, this entire section of the book that we just read?
Just rereading it, it, like, makes me think of being a teenager and just being so depressed again. Like, just that angst and everything I feel for her. Like, there were times where I was just feeling so sad because I was, like, empathizing with her, because I've been there, like, to feel lonely and excluded, and, like, I feel bad for her. She might be, like, being dramatic, but it's making me sad.
It's bringing back memories that you just, quite frankly, don't want to have again, which definitely adds to, like, I guess the difficulty in reading this portion of the book. It doesn't get better yet, I would say, in the next third of this book. But yeah, my notes on this is that, like, I was saying that I understand that Bella was going through grief. Like, she's trying to process and go through her grief in these, like, chapters, but it was so frustrating to read. Like, because obviously as the outsider in this story, you're like, you know what's, like, the better way for her to go about this. Or, like, you're like, oh, Bella, I wish you could do this. That might be just, like, a better option instead of, like, doing these actions that are going to trigger these bad memories and things like that. So, yeah, I just found, like, these first few chapters really frustrating because I'm like, Bella, I want to help you, but I'm also, this is a fictional story. I can't help you.
I know.
I can't help you.
It also really didn't sit well with me either whenever they were on the motorcycles, how careless and reckless she was something that he worked so hard to build for her.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
she literally
about,
like,
breaking the motorcycle. She was just thinking about seeing, like, a fictional thing in her head,
mm-hmm,
or hearing it in her head.
Yep. So I don't know. Everything with, like, this plan of hers just doesn't.
She's just being really selfish and it's annoying.
Mm-hmm. And we did talk about how, like, in this situation, or in general, like, the first half of the book, you can notice that, like, Bella's being selfish in her intentions, but, like, Edward was also very selfish in, like, how he went about things. The other note that I added was that, and I said this multiple times in this recording, that I 100% side with Jessica after that Port Angeles situation.
Yeah, definitely.
And then I also said that I completely forgot how Bella acquired these bikes. Like, I forgot that she found these bikes and then brought them to Jacob. For some reason, I thought it was, like, Jacob already had these bikes and Bella just went to him randomly. Like, it didn't connect to me that these are the things that went that happened in order for Bella to acquire the bikes. I just completely forgot the bike part in general, to be quite honest.
I completely forgot about it too, honestly.
All I remember is Bella being really depressed and sad because Edward left, and then Jacob filling that hole in the meantime. Like, that's all I could remember. The void. I'm like, there's a void, and Jacob helps to fill that void. And that's all I could remember about New Moon. That's all I could remember. Yeah, that's all the notes that I have for these first few chapters. Is there anything else that you want to add, Tori?
My final thought is that Bella is a Virgo queen, and that's it.
Bella is such a Virgo. I wonder if there was a reasoning that Stephanie Meyer made her birthday the 13th, because the number 13 is always like associated with like not the best things. It's usually like a bad luck kind of thing. So I didn't know if maybe there was a reason that her birthday is specifically September 13th.
Yeah, I wonder.
It's also not that far before my birthday.
Another Virgo queen.
Oh my God. But yeah, I don't have anything else to add. So we're going to be reading chapters 9 through 13. 16. Or 16. So I'm thinking about Bella's birthday. 9 through 16. And honestly, I cannot remember what's going to come in these next few chapters. I'm assuming the wolves will be realized a little bit. So I guess we'll go from there. Yeah, it's been a time rereading New Moon. Like I said in the beginning, it's one of my least favorite books of the entire series just because it's so sad. And just like a lot of depressing things happen.
I may have cried a few times.
I didn't cry, but I definitely I could feel for her. I was very empathetic for Bella and her actions, even though I didn't really agree with them and I wish I could help her, but this is a fictional story. That being said, thank you all for listening to this week's episode. Remember, you can tune in every other Monday as we fall back into our Twilight obsession like it's 2008 again.
You can find Call in the Shots on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and your usual podcasting platforms.
Come sit with us next time at lunch for more of our sparkling personalities. Bye. Bye. So long. Farewell. Farewell. Have you to think goodbye.
I'm glad you know it because I don't.